Because I'm not going to do it. It gets screwed up every time.
I know it does. It screws up every time either of us are in charge.
Yeah.
So either one of us, we screw it up. It's like the one button we always forget to push.
Up here, and we're going to need house sound for you this afternoon.
Is it
too
bad?
I can't hear you.
Your voice is frying.
Okay,
well, if we move everybody up front.
What's that?
If we move everybody,
we're good. Okay, so let's get moving on now that we've introduced everybody. A few of you, through your own level of modesty, kind of undersold yourself. One of the ones I might point out, Eric, you have probably the most beautiful school of anybody in the country. Tell them a little bit about your facility.
It's a 10,000 square foot building on 12 acres, and custom designed, so it's a nice facility.
We'll have to show them pictures. I mean, you have like an archery range outside, and you teach and have what hopefully this year will turn to a $1 million a year school, with predominantly kind of an adult soft style and then adult hard style kung fu format. So unusual, but a lot of people in here undersold themselves. Now, everybody who has an iPad, hold your iPad up. So everybody who's addicted to an iPad, fantastic. I am too. There's a little button on the top of the iPad right here. See that little button? So Tim, rather than text messaging, let's turn our iPads off. Everybody turn your iPad off. And you have to do the little thing that they're arguing with Samsung about right now. You know, the patent wars, right? Everybody has a laptop. Hold your laptop up. Everybody who's a techno nerd like that, if you have an Apple, hold it really high so you can be proud of it. Good. Close the damn laptops for me. Okay? Who in here wants to add a million this year? I got to tell you, all your damn text messages will wait. Your email will wait. And if your operation back wherever it's at is going to fall apart between now and lunch break because you didn't communicate with the staff, you're more fucked up than I can fix. Okay? So close the laptop. Who has an iPhone? Turn it off. Okay? If you have kids that might need to get hold of you, turn the ringer off. Okay, but we want to have a learning environment here where we're going to focus, and we don't want to focus on text messaging, Facebook, Craig. We don't want to be focusing on our Facebook, our text messages, or email today. Everybody good with that? Okay. No, that's okay. We don't need yelling about laptops on the tape. Yeah. Okay, you good?
Yeah, you're good.
Yeah. Okay. If you guys in the back ever have trouble hearing me, which I doubt, let me know. We're going to see if we can wire the house sound for Toby for later this afternoon, because once we get into technical stuff, you're not going to hear him back there. I know, because I couldn't hear him back there. So let me give you a couple of starting points here. Everybody who's running a $500,000 and up operation, stand up. $500,000 and up. Okay, so here's the deal. For the next 3 days, really I'm going to do what we tell our martial arts instructors to do when they're teaching family classes. What I tell the instructors to do is talk to the adults at an adult level and an adult vocabulary, then translate to the kids. Because otherwise, what do you end up with? You end up with romper room, right? So I always tell them to talk to the adults at a high level, and then when they go over their head, to translate for the kids, right? So what we're going to be doing is totally talking at this level. And now if you get lost, that's okay. Ask questions at the break. Ask of everybody. And by the way, we're going to record everything. So everybody who's in our group, it'll be on the website and stuff, so you can go back. But we're going to go at a very high level all weekend. Is that okay with everybody? Okay, good. So have a seat. The thing that I want to start with here is I want to start with the idea, again, just to bitch at you a little bit. If you're not totally engaged in what we're doing, you may miss the one or two things that's really going to make a dramatic difference in the next few months. Would everybody agree with that? See, because if it's a side conversation, text messaging the staff, don't forget the century order today, we have a test on Tuesday, all that stuff can wait. And again, if you don't have your operation going in such a way that those things can wait, we've got to fix it. I was being somewhat facetious before, but we've got to fix that, because really your business should be able to have you abstented for 3 days and run just fine. Does that make sense? But what we have happened so many times, you go somewhere and you're only partially there, right? So if you're not mentally engaged here, you're going to miss a couple of key elements and then go back and really not be able to implement the level you should. Would everybody agree with that?
Yeah.
So what we're going to do, our basic structure is today, about 12:15, we're going to have a lunch break. If you haven't noticed, there's this beautiful cafe out here on the river. I'd suggest that, but there's all kinds of options along here. At about 6:30, we're going to take a break. We're going to go up to my house and have a little reception tonight. You don't have to grab dinner beforehand because we're going to have a taco and burrito bar, and if you just despise Mexican, grab something on the way or when we get done. But we're going to be up there for a couple hours. It's a pretty setting. It is a little cool, so you might want to bring a jacket. For those of you from Florida, it's a nice contrast, I would think. So that's our schedule, more or less. But what I want to do is spend a lot of time, and you'll see me, I'm not addicted to PowerPoints, but I am addicted to these paper pads. We're going to go through a lot of high-level marketing concepts. Then we're going to spend quite a bit of time on internet. We're going to spend quite a bit of time on direct mail. Then we're going to spend quite a bit of time on community outreach marketing and business-to-business marketing. We're probably not going to spend much time on internal VIP referral type of things, although I do want to touch on that because I would say we have five or six people in the room who are better than anybody else in the country on that. What Toby said before, I would anchor a little bit. I had a conversation with a blinding flash of the obvious with somebody. At least I thought it was obvious. And they said our primary method of marketing is referrals, and we want to do a startup. Well, what happens when you're doing a startup and your primary method is referrals? You don't have anybody to refer from, right? Somehow they didn't get that, right? I guess you can walk down the sidewalk and get five or six people and they start referring people. But that's the slow growth method. We have several of the schools, I don't think any of them in the room actually today, we have a few people who weren't able to make it, who have done startups recently. Our goal is always 100 people in the first month, 200 in the first 90 days. Well, you don't do that with referrals. You do that with massive media marketing. But the problem with referrals can be two things. One is you don't go from small to big with referrals. You can get big and stay big with referrals. You can go from mid-size to bigger with referrals. You can't go from small to big with referrals, right? Because there's a certain number of students that just, you don't have enough critical mass for that to work, right? You have a big open house, you have a big buddy day, you have a big self-defense seminar, you have birthday parties, and you still don't have enough stuff going on. Does that make sense? The other problem is if you look in your student body and you're completely populated with people like you want the new students to be, referrals are great. But if you ended up with a bunch of broke people, you don't want to do referrals because what do broke people know? Other broke people. What do rich people know? Other rich people. Who do stupid people know? Other stupid people. Who do college students know? Other college students, right? So you've always got to be careful not to grow from within if you don't have the population base of the type of people that you want to grow in the future. Does that make sense? It's also difficult if you want to expand in a different market. Because if you want to expand in a different market, oftentimes what you have over here isn't what you're looking for over here. So you've got to be aware of that. But let's go into some very high-level marketing principles. And I'm going to try to make it simple, but these are important principles. Number one, anything you're doing, you start with the end in mind. And the end in mind is to always get a student to black belt and beyond. Have a student who's worth $5,000, $6,000, $10,000 to the school. Is that a fair statement? And every step backwards from that has to be the most efficient and effective way to end up with that outcome. And when you're doing your marketing efforts, you're going to find, a couple people mentioned this, some marketing activities are good for generating volume, a high volume of low-quality people. Other activities are good for developing a lower volume of high-quality people. What we'd always like to have is a high volume of high-quality people, right? But you've got to start with the end in mind. The end in mind is, I want this person to be a black belt with me. I want, ultimately, them to be worth to the school $5,000, $7,000, $8,000, $10,000. And every time you're looking at a marketing endeavor, keep that in mind, right? That's the end result. The next piece of it is, ultimately, in order to get that to happen, I've got to not only do a short-term or an intermediate-term enrollment, I've got to end up with them committed truly to train and become a lifestyle. Working?
Yeah.
Okay. But I've ultimately got to get them committed for this to be a lifestyle. The way you enroll them always determines how they think about your program. If you're not careful, you make it so quick, so easy, and so cheap that you predisposition them to think in terms of you being cheap and this being a short-term activity rather than a long-term lifestyle. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So to some extent, what we're focused on is we're focused on effectiveness, not efficiency. Steve Covey passed away recently, but that's one of the principles of Seven Habits is go for effectiveness, not just efficiency. Sometimes the quickest, easiest way is not the best. The problem with staff training is oftentimes the best way is the one that takes the most complicated training on their end. So we start dumbing down systems to make it easier to have dumber and dumber staff, frankly, or to have the same level of staff be able to internalize it better. But then what we do is we weaken the strength of the term of the lessons. We weaken the value of the student, and ultimately we set ourselves up for high churn of low-value students rather than high-value students. Does that make sense? So the next step is we're never going to get a person enrolled unless they come visit us, right? So it doesn't matter what else we're doing. It doesn't matter whether it's Groupon, Google Ad Buys, dinking around, wasting our time with Facebook, doing pay-per-click on Google, or we're doing saturation direct mail. Our goal is not to get them to find our website entertaining. Our goal is not to get them to find the stuff that's dropping in the mailbox monthly entertaining. Our goal is to get them to visit the school, right? So everything we do has to be a grease chute to get one and only one thing to happen at that stage, which is get them to visit the school. Does that make sense? And we're going to spend a lot of time today on internet, but what happens with internet is people, all of a sudden they have 20 different objectives with their website, and most of those objectives are wrong. What's the objective for a prospect of your website? Get them to visit the school. That's all, right? So if the mission is to get them to visit the school, the step before that is we talk to them live. We almost always talk to them live before they come down to visit the school. Occasionally we talk to them live because they stumble in the front door. Usually we talk to them live how? They call us, we call them, right? What's the problem in today's high technology world? Well, they're all wasting their time on Facebook. They don't answer their phone, right? So to a great extent, what we want to make sure we do at that next step is get them to do something old-fashioned. Pick up the damn phone and call us. And a lot of times we forget that. We get so high-tech on all this stuff that we forget, ultimately, the mission is they pick up the phone and call us so we can get them to visit the school, right? And we're going to be talking about sequential autoresponders and text messaging autoresponders and capturing a mobile number so we can broadcast voicemail and all that stuff. But ultimately, if they pick up the phone and call us and we answer the phone and we're halfway decent on the phone, the next step is we get them to visit us. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So don't forget that. What you know what the number one biggest problem is in martial arts schools throughout the country? None of them answer their damn phone. Bob will tell you, including a bunch of you guys. We call your school over and over and over again. Guess what? Nobody answers the phone. In the kids market, I've done extensive research on this for years. Write this down. It's important. The number one time when moms, and I say mom specifically because it's not dad that's getting the kids enrolled, it's mom. 80% of the decision-making for a kid is mom. Okay? Mom calls between 9 a.m., 11 a.m., Monday through Thursday. That's when mom calls. What does mom do? Well, you have mom A, mom B. You have non-working mom, which is less and less and less, who takes the kids to school, gets everybody ready, one thing or another, then goes to the refrigerator and pulls off the notes of what she's supposed to do for the day and starts making calls. Working mom, what does she do? Gets everybody ready, drops the kids off, goes to the office, checks her email, checks her voicemail, checks into the office, then what does she do? All of her personal errands. So she picks up the phone and calls and makes appointments. Now, what we sometimes think is because mom now works, that she's not going to be calling us from work, but guess what? There's a reason why they call it Cyber Monday at Christmas, right? It's Black Friday. What's Black Friday mean? Everybody's out shopping the day after Thanksgiving because they're off work. What's Cyber Monday? Everybody's buying everything on the internet. Well, what are they doing on Monday?
They're working.
The reason they're buying everything on the internet on Monday is they got to the office, checked their voicemail, checked their email, and now they're doing all their personal shopping. U.S. businesses have cost them trillions of dollars because everybody checks in the office, clocks in, checks on what's going on, and then does all their personal stuff. By the way, interesting trivia point. Do you know when the highest volume time is for all the porn sites? 9 to 5, Monday through Thursday.
Really?
Really. All internet purchases are dominant daytime when people are at work at the office, including, which boggles my mind, including, which is still 50% of the volume on online, is the porn sites. They go to the office, checking their their Google, and pull up the porn, which is running behind their spreadsheet.
Just give me
shit. I know. You wonder why American business has productivity problems, right? But that's what's going on. But from a standpoint of what's relevant for us, mom calls the school between 9 a.m. and 11 a.m. Monday through Thursday. When do most martial arts schools start answering their phones? Well, the little minnows answer their phones from like 5 to 7, huffing and puffing with cordless, saying, I'm in the middle of class, can I call you back, right? The guys who kind of think they have their act together, now they're kind of answering their phones from 3 to 7. And then the ones who get kind of big, maybe they answer their phone from noon to 6, unless the secretary's on the phone noon to 9. But when's mom called? 9 a.m. to 11 a.m., okay? I tracked this for years. We had, with 5 and 6 locations, always the phones forwarded to a central number. Even now at the franchise, we have an 800 number that routes the individual's location. And if it doesn't ring through and get an answer within 3 rings, it routes to an answering service, because we know that for the kids' market, mom calls 9 a.m. to 11. And by the way, for the adult market, when do they call? Same deal. They're calling during the day, right? For God's sake, they're not going to go home, turn on NFL football, or turn on Housewives of Orange County and waste their time calling and making errands like this. They do it during the day while they're working, right? So you've got to have that in mind. So the mission is a student who's worth $5,000 or $10,000, who's going to ultimately commit to a lifestyle and become a black belt. You know that you have to get them renewed in order to get that to happen, because typically we don't sign them up for 7 years at the first lesson, right? You have to get them enrolled first, but you want to make sure that enrollment predispositions themselves to be with you as a black belt, not to be there for a short term. What many of us take, and we've almost all been guilty of this in one time or another, is we look at our school as a teacher and as an athlete, and we say, well, if we're just good enough, they'll stay around forever because they enjoy every class. So you've got to write this down because it's important. That's unfortunately an entertainment model. The problem with entertainment is, I went to Total Recall a few days ago. I liked it. I'm not going to go twice a week. Right? Went to a great Broadway play. Went to Rock of Ages when we were in New York. I loved it. I'd be willing to go back once or twice. I'm not going to go twice a week, 3 times a week. Right? See, the problem with thinking that it's about just making sure they're entertained is if they don't have goals and they don't have a long-term commitment and they don't really have objectives and outcomes that they're targeting, you can never entertain them enough, right? I mean, if they put $20 million into a Broadway play and I'd be willing to see it 2 or 3 times but not twice a week, what chance do we have, right, if it's just entertainment? Move it back. The next step is, remember, from every source, you're trying to accomplish 2 things. High-quality prospective students. Right age group, income level, mentality that you're looking for. Always, I call it fishing in the right pond, right? You always want to be fishing in the right pond. It's not just about volume, it's about high quality traffic, okay? And keep in mind that everything you do ultimately is to visit you. Now, stepping back a step, in everything that you do, there's 3 levels of initial contact with somebody that you want to always move through. But if you can accomplish down to the 3rd one, you're better off. And what I mean by that is, doesn't matter where you're at. It can be online for a visitor, it can be out at a fair with a booth, it can be at a movie theater with a booth, or it can be at a birthday party. Probably you've all had this experience. You go out to a big gathering of people and you have a box full of 10,000 flyers and you do a demo and pass out flyers. How does that work? Hardly worth a crap, right? You waste a lot of time because just passing out flyers and entertaining people does not, one, put them in the mindset that they can see themselves as a student. See, if I get you to participate in the class, you see yourself as a student. If I get you to watch a show, I am a spectator, right? I mean, you don't go watch the latest MMA fight or go watch the Tyson Holyfield fight, to go back a little ways, and say, wow, I wish I was doing that. You say, that's entertaining, right? You watch it and you enjoy it. Most people who watch pro football, and it's still the highest televised sport in the world, right? They don't say, wow, I'm going to try to get into football camp. What do they do? Oh, that's entertaining. It's a spectator sport. So one is, we know that you don't go out and just, quote, get your name out. Anytime you're doing a marketing effort and you say to yourself, well, this is going to be good exposure. This is going to be good at getting our name out. What it means mostly is you're wasting your time. Okay? Not totally. Branding is useful. But mostly you're wasting your time. Your mission is always to collect a lead. Now, you can write that down if you're not used to using that terminology and think about it. Your mission is always to collect a lead. So you want name, address, in today's world, mobile phone number, email address. Because if I have name, address, mobile number, and email address, what can I do? I can email them sequentially forever. I can text message them. I can broadcast voicemail them. A live person can call them. I can direct mail to them, and if I was desperate enough, I can show up on their doorstep and knock on their door. Okay? So if I have those contact points, I have the ability to go at them through mail, through texting, through automated outbound call, in other words, broadcast voicemail, and through text messaging, so I have ways of following up. Okay? So it's important to, the lowest standard that you should have on anything you do is collect a lead, right? Anything below collect a lead in almost all cases is wasting your time. Does that make sense? Okay? And as an aside, by the way, I was talking at a YKKM event, and I had Bill Clark in the seminar as a participant. And there was a nice Korean gentleman, I apologize, I can't remember his name, in Chicago, and he was running a school, 700-800 students, enrolling 50 students a month. And so it was one of these deals where we're supposed to share the podium, and I talked for 20 minutes, and he talked for 20 minutes, kind of a wacky format. But he went for 20 or 25 minutes and basically told people a lot of things, and he ended up saying at the end that he was enrolling 55 people a month at this traditional Taekwondo school. And then they went into Q&A, and everybody in the audience was asking about what style of Hapkido he did and how he did one thing or another. And basically all I did was bitch at them about being idiots. And I said, well, he just said he's enrolling 45 people a month. Who would like to know how to do that? Right? And I said, what do you do? He said, oh, we just pass out flyers. And Clark still laughs at me about this one, because I said, well, okay, how many flyers a month do you pass out? Guess what his number was? 100,000 a month. Now, if you pass out 100,000 flyers a month, you can get pretty good volume, especially in a high-density place like Chicago, right? But I'll tell you, Toby and I, we should both have the big brick that we can just bounce our head off of it when we're talking to people on the phone. Because we'll talk to people and say, well, I'm doing a lot of marketing this month. What did you do? Well, I passed out 250 flyers, and I went to a carnival. What did you do at the carnival? Passed out flyers. And we did a demo, and they'll think that that's doing something, right? But the lowest threshold is always collect a lead. And again, anchor that in. You want mobile phone number. Love to have their home phone number also, but most people don't answer their phone anymore, right? So mobile phone number, home phone number, if they even have one, that's the next thing, is people aren't going to have landlines. Mailing address and email address, right? Now, the next step is to go from having a lead when I interact with them to having an appointment. So I've got a specific time that we've agreed to, that they know that they've agreed to, that I've given an appointment confirmation to remind them of when they're going to come visit the school, because really the objective is to get them to the school, then the objective is to get them enrolled, then the objective is for them to be there for life, and inject $5,000, $10,000, $15,000 in the school, right? So the next step, and almost anything that we ever do out in the community, is designed to get an appointment, not to collect a lead. Okay? So the next step is to always get an appointment. Now, unfortunately, for some of you, it requires you actually talk to them. Okay? But the thing is the next step is to get an appointment for which they're going to commit to come in and see you, right? Now, the only problem with that gig is it's really easy to be at a movie theater and say, oh, yeah, I'll be there Tuesday, and completely blow you off, right? So what we'd ultimately like to have is name, mailing address, mobile number, home number, email address, commitment for an appointment, and what?
Confirmation.
Money. Money. Why do we want money? Well, you made a little bit of a commitment, right? Doesn't have to be a lot of money. There is an inverse correlation, by the way, and it's important to always keep it in mind. The more money they give you, especially the more that they perceive that it is, right? You know, because me giving you $500 might be like somebody else giving you $5, might be like somebody else giving you $5,000, right? But the more from their frame of reference they've given you as a commitment, the more solid they are and the more likely they are to show up. Does that make sense?
Yes.
And by the way, the more solid they are, it also translates into the more committed they are to enroll, right? So we do lots of free intros. On the other hand, if they all paid $500, they'd be happier. Because everybody who paid $500 is really going to enroll, right? And a lot of them who come in for free aren't going to. And an awful lot of them that did a $49 Groupon for bag gloves and the month and all that stuff are only going to look for the next $49 Groupon. Does that make sense? So, again, keep the principle is, at the very least, anything you do has to collect a lead. That's the minimum threshold to make it worth your time. Okay? And I'll give you some examples. Everybody's heard of the concept of school talks, right? Is Barry Vanover packaged my idea and did a good job of selling it. Well, actually, if you go back to 1984, Steve LaValle and I were working on things we were doing in the elementary schools. I was doing what I call gym teacher for the day. What we would do is we'd go into an elementary school, we would pass out permission slips, we would then teach every gym class all day. So 500 kids in the elementary school, we would teach 500 kids. We would have permission slips back. Name, address, then home phone number, then no email addresses, right? And so what did we have at least? We had a lead. And we had, you know, interacted with every kid in the school. Still works like a charm, by the way. The only thing that has changed over the years is you got to be careful about outbound telemarketing to their home phone number. Because they'll go bitch at the school principal and you'll get disinvited. Other than that, everything else works the same. The thing that Steve was working on was a thing with the PTA where he'd go in and do like 6 weeks after school every Friday for 6 weeks, do an enrichment program, and then convert them into the school. His problem was they had a tiny little participation in the enrichment program. My problem was I had 700 leads. We had to sort through them all. Over the years, I merged the two ideas, right? And again, Steve and I worked back and forth with it, but we merged the two ideas, so I do a gym teacher for the day to promote the after-school enrichment program and then convert them in, and guess what happened to the registration for the after-school enrichment program? Went from 3% of the student body on average registering to 20%. So now we could go into 500 kids in an elementary school and register 100 of them. 750 kids and register 150. I literally, when we relaunched the thing quite a few years ago now, had schools of 750 kids with 180 in the enrichment program. We couldn't fit them in the gym. One day did 36 enrollments back-to-back on year contracts. We had so much traffic on some of these things that it was basically the enrollment conference, 30 people saying, put a check on the front desk, and we'll give you the paperwork next time. I don't recommend that as a process, but it was that kind of volume you could get in. Okay? But what's the principle? The principle is, you don't want to do anything if it's not generated to collect a lead. Okay? The next step is, if you have to interact with them anyway, you want to make an appointment. And if at all possible in the environment, you want them to give you money. Because the closer you can move up that scale, the better off you are. Again, the problem with a lead is, if it's left in your court to follow up with them, is it's harder and harder nowadays to ever get people on the phone. I mean, what do you have to do? You have to go and Facebook them. And then you have to go, you know, track them down on LinkedIn, and then you have to tweet at them, and then you have to email them, but they don't read their emails, right? Statistically, open rate on emails, by the way, is about 10%. right? Which means 9 out of 10 emails, they don't even open it, right? The only thing, the only key really you need to know about email is the subject line is 95% of the battle. Because if they're not, you know, if they don't like the return email address and the subject line, you're dead in the water anyway. Does that make sense? Something else, and again, we're going to go on the internet a lot later. There was an article in the Wall Street Journal a few weeks ago. Here's what it said. The major marketers, this is Neiman Marcus, Macy's, Nordstrom's, guess how often that they're emailing their customer list? Anybody have a guess?
Twice a week.
How much?
Twice a day.
Yeah, well, it was on average 550 to 600 times a year. Okay? 550 to 600 times a year. And I talk to a lot of people, and I say, how's your follow-up? Oh, it's great. Well, what do you do? Well, we send them an email, and Susie tries to call them. Well, see, good follow-up on email is twice a day forever. I mean, really, that's good email. Because, again, the first hurdle is 9 out of 10 of them never get open. Frankly, Toby has a number better than I do right now, but it's probably 3 out of 10 don't even get delivered. Did you know that? An awful lot of them get blocked at the server. So AOL just randomly throws them away, or Gmail puts them in a spam folder, or Yahoo decides that whatever, wherever you're sending it from isn't a good one to deliver. So, I mean, even deliverability. You get 30% of them don't even get in their inbox, and then of the ones that get in their inbox, 9 out of 10 don't even get opened, right? So what does that mean? You have to do saturation bombing just to get them to pay attention. Does that make sense? Okay, so step back. So the mission is to move as far up the ladder as possible anytime you're out doing your marketing and get a paid intro appointment, if at all possible. And if that's not possible, at least get an appointment for an intro where there's a expectation on their part that they're going to come meet you at a certain time. Everybody, so far so good? Now, what I want to do is move to the next principle here is... When it comes to, I heard a lot of people talking about being mediocre at marketing, but a lot of it is just thinking right about things. And in simplest terms, I don't mean this to not be high level. I want you to write this down. Almost everybody in here has one problem. You're just not doing enough stuff. Okay? If you're doing 5 things a month to market the school, it should be 20. If you have a list of 20, 25 things you can do to market the school, do all of them every month. I mean, you can't do the July 4th parade, except when the July 4th parade comes around, but do a bunch more stuff. And if you took nothing away from this other than you went back and did more stuff, you'd be better off. Okay? The second thing you've got to do is not get fixated or enamored of any one idea or technology. Okay? Some of our biggest failures as franchises that we should never have taken to begin with. They love computers. I mean, hell, I wrote the first book on how to market your school on the internet. They love computers. What do? They sit around all day and write blogs, post their Facebook account, write, do little videos on YouTube, and they think that that's doing something. See, don't get fixated on any one thing, right? The mission is a student who's going to contribute $10,000 or more to the school and ultimately be a black belt, preferably be a staff member, maybe be a school owner with you, right? That's the objective. To get to there, you've got to get them renewed and up into the higher level program committed. To get there, you've got to get them enrolled. Don't get fixated with any one thing. And what recently has happened, a lot of people get fixated on the internet, and it's useful, but it's not like the only thing. Does that make sense? So I see schools get fixated on one of two things, either internal marketing, which, by the way, what's the Achilles heel of internal marketing? It's exhausting, right? Because, see, it's not. You have 600 students, and they're all excited, and so you put a stack of guest passes on the front counter, they all pick up guest passes, and they drag their friends down. See, that's not the way internal marketing works, right? Referrals don't work that way. How do referrals work? You have 12 birthday parties every weekend and you collect leads and you follow up with those leads. Or you have a huge graduation event with invitations and guests that all come to the Belk graduation every month and you collect leads and make appointments and follow up with an open house. Or you have a series of open houses. I mean, internal marketing is all about events, right? So the problem with internal marketing is if you go on vacation and your staff isn't just as good at that stuff as you are, what happens to your results? They crash. And none of that stuff ever is on autopilot, right? So everything has an Achilles heel. the thing you have to do ultimately is simple. Number one is just do more stuff, right? So just get used to constantly doing more things. Now, the next thing, this is important. Everything you do to spend money or time ultimately comes down to what the student value is. And I want you to really anchor this in because it's important. Toby and I end up speaking to a lot of school owners. One of them recently I talked to, he may remember the number better than I do, but I think it was 300 active students grossing $18,000 a month. Okay? Now, what that means is his average student is contributing $60 a month to the school. You take Sean's example, you enroll in a cardio kickboxing program for $297 a month and you renew at $497 a month. His average student is now contributing $350, $400 a month to the school. Right? Now think about that. Now, I'll make an assumption about retention. Let's say that you're not horrible and you're not fabulous and 5% a month are dropping out. Right? So let's say that in this case, you've got a student who's worth $8,000. And in this case, you've got a student who's worth $1,200. If the average person that you enroll is worth $8,000, how flexible are you in what things you can do to market to get them in? You're extremely flexible, right? Okay, and see, this is the problem. Which would you rather be, marketing for Apple or marketing for a Dairy Queen? See, if the average person coming in at a Dairy Queen is spending a buck, how much money can they spend to get people to come in and spend a buck? Now, you can talk about lifetime value of the customer and the soccer team comes in, all that, and you average it out and everybody spends $50 a year, right? But still, you can't spend much money per person getting them in. But if the average person who walks in is going to spend $8,000, now you can do all kinds of stuff, right? And by the way, if they're worth $8,000, could you have somebody on staff who does nothing but watch the internet leads and watch the incoming calls and then gets in the car and drives and shows up on their door and knocks on their door and talks to them personally?
Yep.
See, you could even hire the person to do that and justify it, right? So an awful lot of what you have to be focused on to begin with is what's the average value of a new student? And this is where an awful lot of schools miss the boat. And I think of it this way, by the way, on a higher level. Think of the martial arts industry has de-evolved to the 60s in a lot of ways. And nothing against the MMA guys, but what happened is when the MMA trend came in and all of a sudden people were doing that, they were not have developed under the normal infrastructure of the martial arts industry the way that it's developed. And many of them adopted a health club model, right? What's the health club model? Enroll as many people as you can. Get them on a fairly low. I mean, there's a Krav Maga school in San Antonio that supposedly has 2,000 active members.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, is a viable business model for them. She can't do it. The reason she can't do it is they've got an old service merchandise store, 35,000 square feet, and they can flush as many people in as they want. They're charging $39 a month, I think, for a normal membership, and a whopping $89 a month for a high-level Krav, and you learn how to go through the airplane and do all the stuff with the, you know, with all that stuff, right? But see, the problem is you first got to know what the value of a customer is. Does that make sense? And you've got to continually move your school towards a higher and higher value customer because it creates more flexibility in your marketing endeavors, right? Now, the second thing that's happened over the years in the martial arts industry is, and we lost Don, I think, but we had Don Sutton sitting in the back. Oh, here's Don. And Don will verify this for me. Some of you have been around for a long time. See, back in the 80s, you could do no wrong marketing a martial arts school. You put the crappiest little quarter-page ad in the newspaper, and as long as it said karate and had a phone number, people would call you. If it said karate and had the school name, they'd actually go to the phone book, look you up, and come down and track down. And over the years, the market has changed. Would everybody agree with that? And so over the years, it transitioned probably back in the late 90s or early 90s, to where you had to be more and more industrious to generate people. And what happened was, is most people in the martial arts industry were crappy at advertising and was getting pretty good results from bad advertising. And then when the market changed, they made a fatal assumption. Write this down because you heard it a lot. Assumption was, in general terms, advertising doesn't work. In more specific terms, it was newspapers doesn't work, direct mail doesn't work, TV doesn't work. So what happened was, is those who weren't sharp enough and smart enough to go get a formal education, an informal education, and spend millions developing this stuff, what they missed was, is it wasn't that those media didn't work, it's that they were just doing it poorly. Does that make sense? So right now in the market, two things are true. The internet has changed a lot of things. The second thing is there's an awful lot more advertising messages floating around than there ever was. TV has even changed. I mean, if you want the best example about of where TV is going, watch American Idol. Why do I say that? Two of the best shows. Watch Trump's Apprentice and American Idol. Now, do you know why I'm saying that? Most of the big, expensive advertising is buried in the show. You can't TiVo it. Right? You can't. Now, Dish Network, they just came out with the DVR that skips all the commercials for you. There's all kinds of lawsuits flying now about it, right? But why is the new TV model is what does Trump do? We have this great project for you. The wonderful founders of Outback are here to explain to you what we're going to be doing, and we're going to set up a kiosk where we're sent, right? Well, see, they paid a lot of money for that. But you can't skip it over because the whole show is that, right? American Idol, what is it? You've got all the cute new singers singing in a Ford, and they're doing the song, and they're driving down the Ford, that's part of the show, and you have all of the judges have a Coke cup on the counter for everything. The thing on the back is streaming Coke logos and stuff, and then they do a special project where we're all going to get together and come up with the next Coke, you know, jingle, right? See, I mean, that's because people don't watch 30-second commercials much anymore, so they're looking for a new model. So it is definitely true that media is changing. It's not true that advertising doesn't work. Does that make sense? The way you get advertising to work is you know how to do it. And those people who don't know how to do it really end up with mixed messages. The other thing that's happened in the industry, and this is a real moron alert, so write this down, is two or three otherwise pretty smart, high-level people have said things to the effect of this. They say, all you need to do to be a good marketer of your martial arts school is be a great instructor. Or you don't need to really learn business, marketing, and advertising. All you have to be is so great at student service that everything else takes care of itself. In the academic world, by the way, do you know which institution spends, I don't know if it's the most, but among the most on advertising for new students? Any guesses?
Harvard.
Well, you say, why does Harvard need to spend money advertising new students? They already turned down 9 out of 10 who apply. Why does Harvard spend a whole bunch of time advertising for new students?
Because they get the money later on once they're successful. They get in like a trust fund and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. In part, it's that. And in part, they're constantly working on a higher and higher quality of student. And they're competing for, back when I was in high school, I was a national merit scholar. Right? So now it's like being the star football player. The star football player, what's happening? All the coaches are showing up on your doorstep recruiting. You're a national merit scholar. All of a sudden, the Harvard rep is calling you and the Stanford rep is calling you and all those guys are calling you because they have a pool of people that at that level they're all competing for. Right? So even though it's the best academic institution in the United States, arguably, they're aggressively competing for students. By the way, have you seen West Point is now doing quite a bit of advertising? I've seen quite a bit of print advertising for West Point recently. Why? Same thing. They're competing for the best and brightest, And so they're out marketing to the best and brightest so that they get those people in. It's not good enough to be the best as a teacher. It's not good enough to be the best academics. You've got to go compete for the people you want. Does that make sense to everybody? Yes, ma'am.
I wanted to go back for just a second, if you could, on the student life.
Yes.
One of the things that I've been trying to figure out is you say, yeah, let's take the student value, and the average student value is $8,000 or $10,000. But when you figure in the retention rate, that's not actually accurate. So you can't just take like, the value of your program and say they're going to spend that with me if they join.
Right.
And my understanding is that in most places, the average is they stay 6 months and then they're gone. That's what I got from ASF as far as their numbers. So my question is how do you do an accurate calculation of your student value?
Well, you just brought up three or four numbers, right? So think about, I use two words interchangeably, your retention rate or your quit rate, right? It's just opposite sides of the same coin. And so let's say you have 300 active students, and on average you're dropping out 30 a month. That's a 10% dropout rate or quit rate or retention rate, or 90% retention rate, right? Or you're dropping out 15 a month and you're at 5%, or you're dropping out 7.5%, so you're at 2.5%, right? And as we look at good traditional programs, good Muay Thai, Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, MMA programs that haven't screwed themselves up with thinking about it as a fitness center, is somewhere between here and here seems to be doing pretty well, okay? I've seen a few get below 2%. Not many get much below 2% dropping out per month. In other words, at 600 active students, that would be I need 12 a month to stay even, right? This is a very important number. Tim Kovar and I have always been very close friends, and all of their marketing was developed by Tim and I working together. And they used to have a big 13,000 square foot school building they owned outright with 700-800 active students. But his reference for it emotionally was feeding the beast, right? He called it feeding the beast because the problem was they needed 40 students, 45, 50 students every month to stay even. So if they didn't do 40 or 45 students every month, translated means their average monthly dropout rate was 5 or 6%, right? So if they didn't get that many students every month, they were going downhill. Right? So it's a very important number. Yes, ma'am.
My question is, when you talk about retention rate, I just want to make sure that I'm using the right numbers because I believe ASF as well and it's not very clear.
Yeah, forget their reports and forget their feedback. Okay? So I'll tell you the problem with their feedback is ASF is the biggest billing company in the fitness industry. Right? That's number one. Number two is everybody in the room here is in the top 2 or 3 or 4 or 5% of the industry, or in the top 1%, or soon to be in the top 1%, right? And you might want to write this down just to keep in mind. All of your peers, if they're not in this group, are morons in this industry. Okay, I don't mean that to sound harsh, but in almost every business, the top 50% don't have a clue what they're doing. Okay? In the martial arts, more or less right now, there's 14,000 schools in the United States, and no more than 10 or 20% are even trying to better themselves, right? So if you take the total of NAPNA and MIA and EFC and all the different sources of information, you know, there's maybe 20% of them, right? What does that mean? 80% are too, you know, lazy and dumb to even try to better themselves, right? So, so what that also means, by the way, is never, ever, ever, certainly never say it to me, never draw a radius around your school, figure out what everybody else is charging, and say, hey, I'm about the median of everybody. Well, I'm already the most expensive. Doesn't matter. Because they're mostly all idiots, right? Let me take a poll. Who in a 10-mile radius of your school is just dominated by really high-quality schools that scare you because how much of a competitive threat they are? See, I mean, truthfully, our problem is the opposite. is our problem is most of the industry is poisoning the market. Because if they're at all aggressive, they're out giving people a bad idea of what this is all about. Does that make sense? So you've got to be aware of that. But that's one of the numbers, Penny, that you talked about was monthly dropout rate.
Right.
And what I would say among this group is that mostly it's going to range in this range with a few that are down in here. Anybody below 2% in the room?
Okay. I'm the only guy in town doing it properly. And everyone is doing it. Everyone's trying to, it took years to get it, right? This doesn't happen overnight. But I was the only one that was making sense of connecting with my clients.
And right.
The more you connect with your client and find out what they want, even they may not know what they want, and they say, you're a great solution, you drop a ring.
Right, right.
Mine's at 1%, 1-2%.
Yeah. 1 or 2% a month dropping.
Figure out what's the best way to calculate that student value number, because if you do have
answering the question. Okay, I'll tell you what I found.
It's not as simple as just taking the value of what your contract is and multiplying it.
No. Your price sheet has nothing to do with it.
Yeah.
Well, not nothing, but it's that doesn't get you there, right? The second. But anyway, go back to this. See. If I'm at 600 active students, there's a huge difference between I need 60 a month to stay even, I need 30 a month to stay even, and I need, what would the number be, 12 a month to stay even, right? Mm-hmm. And the first way that you can become a genius at marketing is need as few as people as possible to replace what you've already got.
Sure.
Okay? Because the biggest untapped resource is fix your quality of service, right? And frankly, pretty much everybody in here should also probably spend. Jonathan Metcalf, who didn't make it, but he actually has a line item in his P&L, and it's stuff that he spent on student service. In other words, he sent cookies to grandma because she's in the hospital, sent flowers to mom at the hospital for the new baby, sent a present for the birthday. I mean, we should all invest an awful lot more money in stuff like that, right? But the other number, the easy number, by the way, Penny, is not necessarily the right number, but the easy number is I always just look at what the monthly gross is divided by active.
Right.
We want that to be at a base level of 200. We want it to trend towards 300 or more.
And that's what I've been using right now. I'm just not sure if that's...
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So if they're dropping out on average at 5% a month, that means you have 20 months, right? If they're dropping out at 10% a month, you have half of that, right? So and see, like ASF's numbers, most of the people they're doing are...
I know it's probably jaded, but...
Well, they're mostly...
It caused me to question the...
One, they're mostly health clubs, right? But even the martial arts clients that they have are mostly little ones. Mm-hmm. And so what they're doing is they're signing them up for... $99 down, $70 a month, month to month, no contracts, cancel anytime you want. Or it's a 6-month enrollment, but you give us 60 days option anytime you can cancel. It's a 12-month enrollment, but cancel anytime with 30. I mean, it's all that kind of stuff, right? And it goes back to what I said earlier. If you set people up to think about this as having no commitment, they're going to be, they're going to fulfill that, right? Because see, the hard part is for them to think about us like it's Harvard. Okay, we want them to think about, I just got accepted into Harvard, I'm going to be there long term. What we don't want them to think about is, I'm going to try this out for a while, and it's it's the soccer season, and we'll try it out. Right?
So if you use that number right there with the average value for this monthly,
right,
with the gross number, and what I heard Toby say is multiply that by the retention
yeah.
rate.
Yeah, that gives you a real number.
Okay.
Yeah, well, yeah, that gives you a real number. So.
$4,000.
The
average
student value for
got it.
Okay. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. Or the average student value per month is 200, right? But the other thing, just as we went on that as an aside, not to make it too complicated, but keep in mind is the average amount of money that somebody's going to spend with the school is just a conglomeration of these things, right? How much of a down payment they give you, how much that they're paying for the initial enrollment, how much of a down payment they're giving you on the renewal, how much they're giving you on a monthly on the renewal, what the percentage is that's paying in full, and then any ancillary stuff, right? So if you do a bunch of 3-year paid in fulls with a 5% attrition rate, you end up on average with them paying you an extra 16 months that they wouldn't have paid otherwise, right? So a paid in full, the value of paid in fulls is in inverse correlation to your retention rate, right? So you mentioned like the old Bill Clark model. Well, part of what Fred was doing is teaching people not to worry about retention. Cash everybody out. So if you cash everybody out, you don't have to worry about they're still there, right? You can question the morality of that logic, but the reality is the mathematics are more or less right. So the better your retention rate, the less impact it makes to accelerate the tuition or to pay in full. And the worse your retention rate is, the more of an impact. But even if you're pretty good, let's say you're 2.5%, you're going to have them there and have an average of 40 months, right? So if you're at 2.5%, no amount of doing 6 months or 12 months or 18 months paid in full helps you at all. But if you're doing long-term paid in fulls, then it helps you, because the only advantage of paid in full, other than time value of money, is the fact that you got paid for more than they, on average, were going to take otherwise, right? And then, ironically, what happens is the paid in fulls improve your retention rate, because now you don't have people dropping out because they lost their job. You don't have people dropping out because, you know, finances got tight. You don't have people dropping out because grandmother got cancer and I'm having to help contribute to the medical expenses, stuff like that, right? Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay. So, any other questions on that? Hey, but let's now go back to another concept. It's a term I stole from Jay Abraham, but it's the Parthenon. And think of in Greece, the Parthenon, you know, the big building with all the pillars, right? Is you never ever should have one thing or two things that drive all your traffic, because that one thing can implode. Okay, again, I use the Achilles heel, and there are very little downsides to being as good as you can possibly be on internal referrals. But the one downside is if you go to Hawaii on vacation, or you end up in the hospital, or any other reason that you're not there driving the energy this month, what can happen is it goes to nothing, right? So the reason for having a Parthenon, meaning you have massive internal referral activities, you have massive search engine optimization, so you're driving traffic to your website that way, you have active pay-per-click that you're not having to very aggressively manage, you have repetitious, systematized, organized direct mail follow-up, you have ongoing, in some markets, TV campaigns going and stuff like that. But the reason for having all these different pillars is so that if one of them doesn't work, you're still in good shape. My marketing principle has always been I want to have enough stuff that I realistically expect double the number of enrollments that I need to feel comfortable, right? So if I'm targeting, my number for years was 120. Every month I had to have 120 enrollments. So my mission was enough stuff that should be 250. Because what happens? You always have Murphy's Law somewhere, right? So if I always had everything going where I could have 250 enrollments, occasionally everything would work great and we'd be flooded. But usually something didn't work this month and I still had my 120 that month. Does that make sense? So you always want to look at it that way. So one concept is you always want to have the Parthenon. So you have to have a lot of pillars. And never let it just rest on one or two pillars. Always have a lot of things going on. Does that make sense? Okay. Hey, I saw Greg come in. We took a vote. We decided that everybody who's on staff should know how to spell my name.
Oh, that's
No, Nancy, who does our editing for the magazine, doesn't know how to spell my name. I think we got her to figure that out. Gary, who does our artwork, doesn't know how to spell my name.
I was gonna defend him and say, well, if you could pronounce the company name right,
I'm just congenitally opposed to acronyms of all sorts. To me, acronyms are a good way to ensure nobody knows what the hell you're talking about. Are you changing tape or mic? Okay. Let's welcome Grandmaster Smith, who finally made it in after struggling with the airport for 3 hours. We were doing introductions, so let's introduce Amanda Christensen, stand up. Amanda's our owner-operator in Thornton, Mile High Karate, for what? How many years now? For 10. So she's been with us for about 10 years. Amanda is the prototype of, she knows everything she needs to know to run a $2 million a year school, and occasionally she works hard enough to go in that direction. And Grandmaster Jeff Smith, you guys probably all know him, but he's been running professional schools since, what, 1969?
70.
His background was really, you know, the Junior Institute, it was him and Nick Okinas who were going out throughout the industry looking for new ideas and developed the Junior Institute into the pre